from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the Path.
Live from the Path, coming for the Pathway Studios. Here at Johnston proper. Oh man, yes. Yeah, we don't go over there.
Okay.
That's where people that don't love Jesus are at.
We've
been saying Johnston proper for years, and I don't know about this Johnston improper. That's what I was asking about.
That's the start of the show. Yeah. Brought to you by Boova.
Here's the deal. If you were expecting something other than cheap laughs, this is not the show for you.
It's not.
Read Romans or something. Spend your time. You can do better. As a matter of fact, if this in any way like pacifies you as if, hey, I got my Jesus fix this week, like you've set a very low bar and it's time to reorient your life. As a matter of fact, I repent often in the show. you don't catch it because you're not my accountability man. You're listening to Live from the Path. You make mistakes in life. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. So here's what I had planned for the show tonight. I'll put it this way. We ran into the guys from Unseen Patrol over the weekend, and I've got some stuff for them. I'm going to post it on the web, but we're not going to get to it tonight. I just didn't have time to get it cut for you guys, and because we weren't on a live show, it simply has some weird intros and outros with people talking. So it's not palatable for human consumption. So I'll get that thing cut up so you can take a listen to. They did a good job. Very interesting stories and very cool guys. Go to unseenpatrol.com. Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job. They were in for worship on Sunday, and they did some stuff in here live in the studio. And I'd be interested to – they got an album that they're looking towards the end of the year. Single's already out on iTunes. Yeah, I'll get some more information on them, but unseenpatrol.com for that kind of stuff. And they're make sure to check them out. They're working hard for Jesus. So other stuff that's on the show tonight. Mike, what's in the – so here's the deal. I don't like saying what's in the news with Hobby Lobby because it brings up a certain – thought of what we're going to talk about, but like, what'd you run into?
I just saw a couple articles on Facebook this week concerning people getting upset that Hobby Lobby continues to call themselves a Christian business.
Yeah.
They're fighting tooth and nail to get certain aspects of the healthcare law under thumb and say I shouldn't be bothered with that because I'm a Christian business. But a lot of their goods and wares have non-Christian origins, and people are like, "Hey, how can you call yourself a Christian business when you're selling peddling a bunch of sinful wares?" And I feel like that'll be a round robin. Everyone will talk about.
Okay. All right. That's coming up. Boova, what are you, your big question of the week is what?
Yeah, my big question of the week is how do you talk to someone who says that they are a believer but does not go to church anymore? They don't think that they need church. They think the church is irrelevant and old-fashioned and is not necessary because they can believe as much as the other guy just by not going to church.
You know what? Can I just answer this now?
No. You can answer it as a group later on.
You know what Patrick Swayze used to say? Hit him in the knees, they'll drop like a stone.
So you want me to hit this person in the knees?
I didn't say that.
So Patrick Swayze wants me to hit someone in the knees.
I'm just saying that's what he said. Can't you discern good advice, Boova?
That's my question, Ben.
Okay. Okay. That's on the table. Got it.
Like a stone.
We also have advice on Dear Life from the Path. Oh, I thought I had another article. I might have another article. I'll have to double check, see what I got going on in life. And Dan, you got some what's trending with Dan? What's happening?
I've got some stuff. A girl named Party Girl had a funeral, and Donald Trump has a big sign in Chicago, and KFC. Maybe you've seen the restaurant kicked a girl out of the restaurant because they didn't like her face.
Oh man!
Wow! Yeah. I'm surprised I've never gotten kicked out of a KFC. Boom! Hey, cheap laughs. I can't.
Not everything is about you, Boova.
Yeah, no
a
kidding.
Lot is, though.
Hey, how
a
can I
is.
Draw the attention from some poor girl that was chucked out of a restaurant back to me?
Yeah,
she was That's attacked by dogs.
See how humble I am. Check out this joke I told,
Boova Swayze.
Maybe you guys should discern good advice and take it. Not
Here's the deal: if you want to listen to a good show, last week's program was excellent. Tonight may be real iffy. The Hearing from God episode actually was pretty stellar. So I would say go back and check that out. It's okay to bail now. That's quite all right. All right. I want to hit Boova's thing. So tell me the exact nature of this conversation, Boova.
Okay. So talking to a gal that I've known for a couple years but have never really talked to, went to high school together. I started talking to her about the show. She asked about this, and she asked how I got started in the radio show and things like that. I said that it started with the church, and that I kind of just randomly started hopping off on one day, and they kind of let me hang out ever since. Going from that statement straight into a long post about why she doesn't like the church anymore, why she doesn't like being in the church, and why she doesn't do the church thing anymore. And my first inkling from a standpoint that I've lived for a couple years, not really trying to bring people to Jesus, was, ha, I got a joke. And I typed out, well, you can come to my church. I'm sure Jesus would love to see you. And then after realizing how awful a joke was, I deleted that. And then I actually just started asking her, you know, hey, do you believe in God? And she said, yes. And I said, do you believe in Jesus as the Son of God? She said, yes. I just don't like church, and I don't see the concept of why church is there and why I need church. And I don't. I think it's outdated. I think it's old fashioned and doesn't apply to me. And then made the comment that she can believe just as much as the other guy that goes to church, even though she doesn't go to church. And the premise of where I'm asking this question comes from, I've been spending a lot of time in the Word and learning, you know, God's heart on how to talk to someone who does not believe in God, and talk to someone who does not believe that Jesus is the Christ. And I've gotten better at how to rebuttal with that, not to come at them from a factual standpoint of trying to disprove their theory, but honestly come from the standpoint of, you know, I got a God that loves you, and there's a man that was murdered for you. And that cares about you more than you can ever understand. And I've been coming from that standpoint with someone who does not believe in God and who does not believe in Jesus. But I've never, after looking back, honestly run into the situation where someone believes in both of those things but does not want to be in the church. And that got me thinking. I don't think I've ever really thought about how to talk to that, how to talk to someone about where the church comes from, what church is, and everything like that. And I gave them an answer, and I have an answer, but I'd like to see, just from you guys' standpoint, from other believers, on how you would talk to someone who you've approached about God and about Jesus that says they believe in both but does not believe in the church.
Can we ridicule your answer first?
No, I want you guys to give your answer.
Dang. Well, I mean, that takes a little bit of the spice out of it.
I feel like that's everybody I've ever met.
Really?
The girl that you're talking about. Yeah, she just picked a different subject. Right? Like, everybody likes to claim Christ as their Savior. Very few accept Him as their Lord. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can say, I believe in God. I suppose that's true. I think that probably more accurately described, you believe in the idea of God.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in God as a whole, then you do read His Bible and seek to see what he wants, what He's created, and what His kingdom is to look like. And that's where the church came from, right? The church, it was God's idea. You know what I'm saying? You can't be like, he's an all-knowing, sovereign Lord. And He loves me, and He sent His Son to die for me, and He's amazing. I'm not really interested in anything that He has to say, but I do believe that He's there. That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
And that may be a gross generalization, but like it's that you'll find the same attitude on folks that find tenets of the faith outdated and decide that they don't want to deal with those anymore either. They're more than willing to go to the building, but that, you know, that one thing that Paul said, I don't know about that anymore. That was kind of old school. I feel like we've moved on from that. This is just a hyper, you know, hopped up version of that. She's just happened to use it with church attendance opposed to the issue of the day. That's what it sounds like.
Well, man, there's probably a distinction in here about, first of all, I mean, she could be straight up right. I mean, like, she could have had a bad experience somewhere in a church, and people that you know, didn't love Jesus, or did and still burnt her. It's not like the Bride of Christ is always going to handle things perfectly.
That's not possible.
She also, I mean, there's a distinction in here about the church as the Bride of Christ versus the church as an event or as an organization.
That was my thought, that she has come to the conclusion that the event that she has attended in the past is church, and the event is what she may be turned off to, and she needs to be reintroduced to the community that is the Bride of Christ. And
you're right. People can't become outdated. That's saying, hey, my grandma's out of date. does come from a perspective that it's got to be either the event or like how they maybe. I mean, they could think the organization is patriarchal. Like there's ways to look at it and get that impression. But like as a community, people don't go out of date.
Right. Based off the story that I got, I was assuming that she got tired of the show.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, exactly.
So I get that.
That's one of the things that I commented on. So how would you speak to someone about that?
I got tired of the show.
Yeah, so they've been involved in the show that is church before, and felt like their church was disingenuous and that there was no point.
Because you got two ends of the spectrum. Some go to a church that is so 1950. It's definitely not a show, but it's an event that they don't connect with. And then there's some on the newer spectrum and the newer churches that can put on such a show. A lot of people are also getting disenfranchised from that, saying, I want more than a sparkle. You know, I need something to belong to here. Maybe it doesn't matter, but would you say she was more in the contemporary?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay.
Well, it's not just a polar issue of you're either in the 1950s or else, you know, in the 2000 whatever decade we're in now. There's also just... Well, yeah, I guess present tense, yeah. There's also just the fact that, you know, we're either doing something very mechanical or we're doing something very processed and produced and very polished. I didn't mean for the alliteration there, but sorry. But it could be that they're looking for a community where they can just really connect with people heart to heart and see and walk alongside each other and encourage each other as faithful followers of God. And usually that'll take a smaller type of a format, but it's still a church nevertheless, and it's still a community of believers who are working alongside and helping each other as we're all trying to learn and follow Jesus. So any of those are different options in terms of how church can, the type of form that a church can take. I mean, there isn't like one size fits all when it comes to the church.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so, I mean, like, honestly, most people that are coming from that perspective, there's some validity to how they're feeling. Like, they feel that way. When the question is like, you know, what has caused that? Is that a true picture of the church? Mm-hmm. Is what you're looking for? What, A, are you looking for the right thing? Mm-hmm. And B, you know, what is the root of what's causing that? You know, I think Mike's right though. Like, it's hard for me to name a person who doesn't feel like they were burned at a church one way or the other. Now, here's the deal: is like sometimes they're reacting to Jesus. Sometimes, like, they just don't, they don't like what Jesus is asking them to do. They don't like the life that he's calling them to live. And they blame it on the church, because it's hard to shake your fist at God, because that's a step that people are more hesitant to take. They want to say things like, I'm with Jesus, I'm just not with his people. But you can't say, hey, this is my friend Bob, and then spit in his wife's face. Like, that's not going to fly with Bob.
That sounds outrageous when you say it like that, Ben.
Which is basically like when you say, I'm with Jesus, but I'm not with the church. Like, I can't get on board with that. If we are the representative bride of Christ, you're going to have a hard time being friends with Jesus, who loves his bride, and you spit in her face. However, like, having problems with organization or having problems with the church as an event, I mean, if it's just a matter of preference, you're going to have to find somewhere else and kind of get over that. But, like, if it's a matter of, I don't like these people getting into my business, as an example, that's your community, man. What you're saying is, I don't care that people care about me. And, like, if you don't want that, then you really don't want a relationship with Jesus and what he's offering. So, I don't know, you're going to have to kind of bail on the whole thing, but you're going to have to deal with it honestly. If you don't love, if you're upset at God, don't blame it on the church. That's a pansy move. If you're upset because of the event or the organization didn't go the way you wanted, you could have been in a rough situation. You could have brought that to the table, or you may just need to go somewhere else and, like, find a vibe that fits what you're looking for. But have the right expectation about what Jesus is offering and how he looks at the church. If you can't look at it that way, you at least have to be honest about the fact that, like, you and Jesus ain't where you think you are if you look at his church and say, I don't need to be a part of that.
Go ahead, Bova. Sum it up.
So that's what you guys would say to the person?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd take a while. Probably 15 minutes at least.
I was going to say, I think we've broken down the concept of her idea, but I don't know if we've said anything we'd say to them. But all right, so ultimately this is what I talked to. I talked to those points as well. I said I understand the concept that a lot of churches have become a show. And I understand that a lot of times it seems like they're not really part of the body of Christ and not really making up the bride of Christ. They're not showing God's true heart. And I said, I know that a lot of times you can be involved in places that the church gets in the way of God. And I honestly believe that. There's a lot of people that can stand in the way. And I know I do it sometimes too. And I'm sure there's things that our church does this too on. Obviously, we try to eliminate those. But I said, I completely understand that. But I will tell you that's not the intention of the church. God's intention of the church is completely different from what you've probably run into. that this is meant to be the body of Christ, the one who died for us. This is meant to be the people that God works through. We do the acts here. We work. Our God works through us. We're meant to, you know, called to feed the poor and help out the widows. We're called to be there and make disciples of all nations. We're called to do so many things. And all we do is sometimes we put on a show on Sundays and then we leave on Sunday and that's it. It seems like all we do is the 2 hours on Sunday and then the church is gone and it disassembles for a week and it comes back on Sunday. And I said, I'm sorry if that's what you've run into before. I'm sorry if that's the idea of the church that you've been subject to in your life. I think that that's completely wrong from what God intended it to be. And I can't take back those situations and I can't take that back. But what I can tell you is that I believe that I go to church that tries to battle that. And that tries to honestly embody what God wants us to be and honestly wants us to be or honestly believes in what God wants us to be is more than just a show on Sunday mornings, but as a community of people that are believers in Christ and believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, and that do works and do acts through that and that put that out rather than just a show on Sunday morning. We exist throughout the week. And I want to invite you into that. I can understand where you've been burned before. I know that I've been burned, even in the small amount of churches that I've gone to, and I've been pushed away by some of the churches that I've been in. But the one that I'm in right now, I honestly believe has done a good job of trying to interpret and trying to follow exactly what God wants us to be and is doing our best as humans to do that. So that was my answer to this person, and then followed with a, well, if you'd like to come, I would love to have you with me on Sunday. We can even sit in the back. Where no one will see you. Because she talked about she feels like she's been judged before in churches and she feels like all it is people pushing their agendas on her. And I said, well, we can sit in the back where no one even talks to you.
Well, it depends on what their agenda is. If it's Jesus, then I feel like they're doing their job.
I agree.
Yeah.
I go there and all they want to do is talk to me
every
about Jesus.
Every time I come here, you're like, God,
every
this
time
and
I
God
go to church, it's like, oh, man, this Jesus guy, he's everywhere. Ugh.
I'd recommend you not sit anywhere near Mike Foose, though.
What do you mean?
I'm the
welcoming committee.
No.
I've heard some of the welcoming noises sometimes are
hey,
you're the accountability committee.
I should tell a story. Now I got to tell a story.
Rumblings and pins.
I had an unfortunate bodily incident at the church a couple days ago, a couple weeks ago. It was very unfortunate. I had been stayed up way late and I had a rough time and I fell asleep during the church service, which is embarrassing. But then I woke myself up with a bodily function.
Like the dog does.
And it was
if that helps.
That is amazing.
It was
well, God enough that several people heard it and ran outside laughing.
That people left immediately.
If God I was that too, right?
If we were one of those churches, I would have been shunned.
Hey, you know who didn't laugh? The guy sitting right in front of him, a.k.a. this guy.
Yeah, it was
yikes.
It was terrible.
Cats. Yeah, she's welcome. Send in the clowns.
Exactly. Oh, that's awful. All right. So that's what I said.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give your answer like a 5 out of 10. It was
thanks.
All right.
Thanks. Appreciate that one.
I mean, I might come to your place based on that. I might.
Here's the deal. Is like
I was expecting less than a 5 from you.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
That's above par. This is great.
Here's what I can't do is I can't overpromise. Like, you know who goes to church? People like me.
That's true.
People like Mike who win during the service. Like, you know what I'm saying? And as a collective body, whatever it is that you're afraid of, it could happen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the nature of living in community. Like, whatever your family is, it's that, except for we have good intentions.
Yes.
And we're hopefully submitting to Jesus.
I was going to say, I've woken myself up not from bodily function. Well, from bodily function, but like, I've woken up myself from snoring so loud. Like, I've passed out in the middle of church, and I've actually
you're
had
making
people...
the church sound very compelling, both of you guys.
This was a long time ago. Don't worry about it.
Dan, your sermons give me weight.
Fortunately, I was not preaching that week.
I legitimately fell asleep.
I was actually
and
dreaming
someone,
about one of your sermons.
I fell asleep, and someone... I woke myself up once from snoring so loud and violently, and then one other time in the 12 years I've been going was I was woken up by another member of the church because of my loud snoring. They kind of just went, hey.
You woke me up.
Hello.
You're snoring.
There's
me awake.
Church going on around you.
Do you have any more stories about yourself you'd like to tell?
Yeah, so a long time. No.
You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. Your church is the same as ours. There's all kinds of folks going to that thing. You know what I'm saying? But they all intention is to love Jesus and figure out how to get where our place in the kingdom is, and we're going to do that as a slow-moving bride. And so that's what's happening. Speaking of what's happening, Dan?
What's happening?
All right.
We're going to start with a sad one. I think this is sad. A KFC restaurant employee asked a three-year-old to leave because her facial injuries disturbed the other patrons. The gal was attacked by a pit bull back in April. The dogs broke her nose, her jaws, cheekbones, right eye. I mean, she's really a mess, and she's needing several surgeries, has had some. She's lost sight of her right eye. Anyway, just a mess. KFC posted an apology the next morning. They gave a $30,000 gift to the family for medical bills, threw a big picnic for the family. They're doing, as a corporate, you know, they're trying to help out. So here's the question. What would you do if you're Victoria's parents getting asked to leave? Sue the pants off the owners, the KFC Corporation, and anyone else associated with the event. B, understand it was probably a poorly trained employee with a less than perfect manager on duty and teach your daughter a painful life lesson. Or C, it's hard to tell because you'd be in jail for assaulting the employee who said that in the first place.
Buva, you're up.
All right, so first off, I want to apologize for my joke earlier that is awful. I didn't realize that was the situation, and I made a joke about it. So that was...
Well, I mean, you didn't know, but this gal's life has been altered.
Right.
Hey,
oh, absolutely.
Hey, this ain't Donahue, man. I don't repent later.
Whatever. So my answer's B. Yeah, okay, there you go. I think
poorly trained.
Ultimately, I would fight myself not to hit the person. If that were my daughter, I would honestly have to fight that, but I want to say that my answer would be B.
Painful life lesson for your daughter, that's B? That's your choice?
Well, B was just deal with the situation, and I mean, not retaliate against...
There will probably be more in the future. Situations where people will look at you
exactly,
differently,
yeah.
Talk to you differently.
I think that A is retaliate, C is retaliate, B is go on realizing that humans are stupid.
Okay. That's Bova's answer. Dave Herrick.
I'm trying to think of any reason why I wouldn't go with C, other than, you know, just it's outright physical violence, but it's my daughter.
That's right. Depends on who the guy's saying it is.
I'm sorry. No, I first off, I don't see any liability for KFC other than their names on it, but this is like one minimum wage employee. I mean, they don't represent the whole company. I understand that much. But the one minimum wage employee, he's in my crosshairs. I mean, whoever it was that said that to my daughter, you owe her an apology, and... Even more so, I'm not sure where it would stop, but
yeah,
no.
The potato wedges. You owe an apology, and I will collect
more coleslaw, yeah. Please.
Yeah, I feel like I'm probably in the B camp. Except for I feel like I wouldn't leave. I mean, you don't have any legal right to throw me out. I feel like I can. Well, what if I'm just ugly, naturally born ugly? You're gonna chuck me too? You know what I'm saying?
They reserve the right.
Yeah, but not him. They have to do it as a collective body. I wouldn't go anywhere.
There were other patrons, by the way, who were complaining.
That's actually where I'm at. I would be interested to know, like, tell me who. Yeah. Point to me out who is complaining about my daughter.
Yeah, I guess
I hate to interrupt your world-class meal at the KFC, my daughter's face. But, like, I'd actually probably leave. I'd say, look, I will leave gladly. First, I need you to tell me who has the problem that may I address.
Right,
it.
Show me the man. Show me their car.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean.
Here's the deal. Like, the employee should have handled it differently, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
They were put in a weird position. I mean, again, there's a better way to handle this, but like somebody brought it up and said, hey, I'm trying to eat here. That girl's distracting me. I'm more interested in that person because like when you're put in a bad spot, you're young, you're probably not the most experienced guy. Like you're prone to handle things incorrectly, but whatever boob this is that brought it up in the first place, I'd like to talk with that person. And frankly, I'd probably bring my daughter over and say, I want you to stand right here and kind of look at this and kind of slowly inch closer and closer to their mashed potatoes.
You know what? I'd probably make my daughter apologize to that guy. Apologize to the guy that your face is messed up. And we'll watch him take it. Now, let's go out to eat a real place. Let's go. Maybe a play place.
Let's go to Popeye's Chicken.
We'll go to a play place. I don't know. That's just a rough, ugly situation all the way around.
Yeah.
You'd hate to. I mean, I don't know.
You'd expect that like in junior high, but this is like,
I had a kid's three. I mean,
adults.
Like she can feel it, but she's not feeling the brunt of it like you are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
she did. She went home crying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It messed her up.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's a sad. The whole thing was just a sad. And I happened to read it online. There was a bunch of comments. Everybody was ripping on KFC.
Yeah.
And it's like it's really not KFC didn't do this.
No.
You know,
that's
there
a
was
cultural
some
thing
choice.
Though. Like you know what I'm saying? Like. Like, every bad decision started at the top somewhere, you know? And, like, it's never one rogue guy. It's never one mistake. It's always the CEO heard that a three-year-old came in with a that needed surgery, and he's like, kick her out now. You know what I'm saying? Like, that guy didn't. He probably doesn't even know that store exists, you know?
Yeah,
it's part of the region. He looks at the regional number and goes, they do pretty good as a region. We're fine. Yeah. I'm not getting my business.
It's a culture of incompetence at KFC that allowed them to hire a middle-aged worker.
Yeah, so
that guy is the face of KFC. Attack him.
Anyway, that's just sad. I pray for the girl and the family. We should pray for the. I don't know if I have. I say I prayed. That'd be a lie.
Okay.
I felt bad.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
You and Boova can rent a corner.
We've repented. Okay, here's another one. Donald Trump puts up a sign with 20-foot letters in Chicago in his Trump Tower there, and the mayor, a bunch of people are upset because it's all his ego and it's ruining their skyscape and all that whole stuff. And it was just kind of an interesting conversation as people were going back and forth on how they were upset about his name on there. I've been in churches where there's like plaques everywhere. Have you ever been to one of those? I've been to a church once where like every 20 feet on a pew there was someone's name had paid for it or on a wing of a building and so forth. And so here's the question. When a Christian kind of turned it away from Trump, but there's still ego involved. When a Christian gives to a church, how much recognition should they expect? A, none. They're just doing what God expects them to do. B, plaques for large gifts are great if they help bring in the cash. Or a C, we should keep a running tally of the top 10 givers in the church on our website to motivate competitive giving and shame those who don't.
Competitive giving.
Did you see my tithe this month?
Did we talk about that? There's a church that keeps like a bulletin board with the top 10 givers.
More than
it's not the good. It's the people who don't give, right? Oh. I think that's who was on the board.
I know of churches that will send out lists of their top. I've heard of. I mean, I don't.
That's pretty rough. Here's the deal. I went to a wedding a couple weeks ago, and it was at an older church, and there was a plaque, there was a board full of plaques, and basically they had like 50 or 60 plaques on it of all the stuff that people had given throughout the history of the church, who did it and what year they did it. And the very first plaque was the guy that donated the board to put the plaques on. I thought, I don't want anything to do with what goes on here. Like, there's nothing that appeals to me. If I thought you were going to take my money and buy a plaque with it, I feel like I would give it to a different church or maybe just a dude that needed help or something. Like, I don't know. I couldn't be any more against plaques of any kind. I couldn't be any more against it. If you are giving for any reason apart from either obedience, because you need that type of obedience in your life, or out of generosity, those are the two reasons I want to see you giving to the Lord. Apart from that, anything apart from that is just you're not giving it for the right reason.
I don't think I will ever look at a plaque at a church the same again. I guess I never really thought about why the plaques are there, but that makes plenty of sense.
They're off a memorial.
Answer A.
Yeah, I'll buy a pew, but you need to put my name on there so everybody knows I've done it. And I want two slots for the hymnal, double hymnal.
Go ahead.
I think we're A around the room on this one.
Yeah, I think so.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I've often said keep the tombstones in the cemetery, not in the church building. It's insane. But I've seen it go crazy with that stuff.
Here's the deal: is I don't know how to have I talked to somebody about this one time a long time ago, and I couldn't decide on how to have that conversation with them. Like anybody, I just feel like this is going to sound terrible, but I just feel like that anybody that finds that to be okay. We don't have anything in common. Like we come from such different camps that I feel like we couldn't even have a reasonable conversation about it.
Yeah.
I mean, could I be that wrong? I don't feel like the plaques are a good idea ever.
Now we had a similar conversation actually as we were preparing a building campaign. It's like, you know, that people do all kinds of things to raise money. And like part of our conversation was like, we raise money the way we always raise money. Like people either give or they don't give. Like what we're not going to do is, like, offer anything. What we're not going to do is, like, you know, try to prod them around. Like, either they're giving because God wants them to or and they're being obedient or they're not. Like, any extra measures we have to take in, it's not blood money, but it really feels like blood money. And, I don't just a Mickey about that. We're not salesmen, and we're not called to be, and so we're not going to be. And there's an element of that where, like, you know, I know why people do it. But it's just like you can do that somewhere else. It's a question of why is the church involved? Can you, if you want to memorialize, you know, put a bench out in your front yard with your grandma's name on it, like thumbs up. Do all you got to do, you know, make one of those stones, put it in your garden. That's sweet. Mm-hmm. But like,
the church really just doesn't need to be involved in that type of thing.
So, you don't, we're not going to raise money for the communion table, do this in remembrance of Bill, John, Sally.
Yeah.
I hope the church never has anything in remembrance of Troy Englinger.
Of me and the following benefactors. Did you watch how Troy brought it back to himself? Hey, by the way, how can I
try not to do that, too?
How can I put my name in this?
Man, I need to change my ways.
This is a rough night, Nova.
I'm sorry, guys. Wow.
Okay, I got one more here. This one was fascinating to me. It's Party Girl was her name. She has one last beer at her funeral. She's remembered as Party Girl, that's what everybody called her, had a final drink during the funeral in New Orleans recently. She was 53 years old. She loved a cold beer and occasional scotch, loved the New Orleans Saints, spent her time drinking at home and in bars. And so when her daughters planned the funeral, they decided they didn't want a traditional religious-type funeral. They actually set up a scene. They had her in a chair with her sunglasses on, holding a beer, a cigarette in the other hand, and it was a dance floor in front of it, and it was a video, a newscast. So I watched it several times. It just kind of creeped me out. I mean, it was like she was sitting in the living room, and her daughters were there dancing in front on the dance floor. Little, what do you call those lights? Those sparkly lights were
disco
going.
Balls.
Disco.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Disco balls. Yeah. That.
Dan, you could not seem any more irrelevant to the culture. Yeah. What do you call them sparkly things that twist around?
They don't call me party boy.
A person can now be outdated.
No one has ever called. Okay, so I'm outdated.
Have you ever seen what they call a Buick?
So, in this interview, this newscast, they talked a lot about her home going and different people's home going without really thinking through where she might actually be going home to. And here's the question. How should a Christian respond to our culture's spiritually generic view of eternity? Because even in funeral, they were taking the spiritual out of it. And they just wanted to make, like, let's pretend like she's at home having a beer. So, A, agree that they had a great life and you hope they're enjoying their new home. B, say nothing, cause no waves, just be glad you're a Christ follower and don't have to worry about eternity. Or C, tell them there really is a heaven and a hell, and home may not be as nice as they think. This is at the funeral, by the way.
Oh, at the funeral. Hey, buddy. Hey, I got some bad news for you.
She's looking pretty happy there.
I realize someone you know just passed away, but here's the deal. I'm probably going to sit with in the B camp. I know it probably doesn't sound like the go get 'em Christian attitude, but like it's ears to hear, man. They got ears to hear that right now. They ain't listening to you.
I probably will answer any questions respond to any commentary in an honest fashion. Hey, they're in a better place.
Yeah, really? They said, hey Ben, don't you think they're in a better place? If they accepted the salvation of Jesus Christ, yeah. Yeah. If not,
was that praying girl on that? No.
Yeah. I mean, and that's probably true for anything, right? Like, if asked directly, we're going to give an honest answer. But like, I think Mike's kind of right there. Like, it's a tough moment, ears to hear moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That what you don't say.
sometimes I feel the same way about like, this is going to sound bad again, but churches and their bar mystery. You know what I'm saying? Like. They're like, we got to go meet the sinners right where they're at, in the midst of their sinful behavior. You know what I'm saying? Now's the time. And I'm not saying that it's not ever the time. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, there's a certain brand of foolishness that thinks that you're going to roll in there and read a Bible at a bar table, and then people are just going to come a-swarming over looking for the gospel. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. But I sometimes think it's some of that is a very huge ears to hear situation where you're not in there to like literally be loving on people and show them the love of Jesus Christ. You're in there to show them that you're right and they're not. And like, if that's the attitude I generally see in outreach like that, and like, that is not effective. That is not the love of Christ. That is, I've got something figured out. You're messed up. You know, check this out. And so like, I'm not saying that, like I said, I'm sure that it has, people have met Christ that way. I'm not saying that it's impossible. I just feel like when you turn it into a pre-programmed, I'm just going to throw the gospel out, don't care who's or what's going on, the people involved don't matter, then you're not really preaching the gospel. You're just saying a bunch of words together.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a scriptural example of Jesus like walking down the streets going like, the Lord reigns, get it here. Like, I mean, there's he's teaching and people are showing up to listen to it.
So have you ever been to a funeral where they actually say that this dude's probably not in heaven?
No. No one hires that guy. You know what I'm saying? No one hires the truth preacher.
I've avoided it in funerals and that I've done. You know, I just don't talk about it. I'll talk about I will often cleverly say, you know, there's a story.
I'm so very clever in this way.
And relative. But I'll go through the story of Lazarus and the beggar, you know, and it goes, they both die, and you know, anyway, basically I would say if he could come back to you, this is what he would tell you. You know, there is a Jesus, there is something, you know, you need to repent. Like was it Lazarus? I'm mixing up in my head right now. It was Lazarus, the rich guy.
The rich man.
The rich man who wanted to come back and warn his relatives, and Abraham's like, you have Moses and the prophets.
Right. There's a chasm. No, yeah, you can't cross the chasm.
I was at a funeral once, and the guy, they did the funeral, and he talked a lot about hell, a little bit about heaven. And afterwards, like, it was some family members of mine said, you know, I just don't feel like this was the appropriate place for it. I said, they hired a pastor. What else do you want him to do? I said, there's no legal reason you have to have a pastor at a funeral.
Right,
if you don't
right.
want someone to talk about Jesus, don't hire a pastor. But, like, if that's – like, if you ask me to do a funeral, that's what I'm there for.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like – and I basically told him that. I said, look, if you die, I'm the closest guy, pastor you know. I will gladly do your funeral, but just know – I'm a pastor of the Lord, and that's what I will be speaking about at your funeral. If not, like, have a buddy do it. There's no official rights of, like, standing over your corpse. Have someone else do that. But, like, if you hire a guy that preaches the gospel and he shows up and preaches the gospel, like, this moment of, I can't believe he's doing that, is a little bit disingenuous.
I actually had someone leave during a funeral once.
Like, really?
Yeah, I was doing some pretty heavy Jesus stuff, and they just got up and left. Like, well,
yeah, buddy.
Yeah. It was awkward. They were right in the middle of the crowd, too, and they had to kind of crawl through everybody. It was like two people and a child. And I was like, well.
Boy.
I guess they don't like the Jesus stuff.
Get your purse, Ethel. We're out of here.
Yeah.
I said, and you, sir, will go to hell. I didn't say that.
Where are you going, Bob?
And there was, I've only done one. I did like a funeral. And like the people afterwards, I had like a few people come up and said, hey, that's you really shared the gospel with this one. And I thought, what funerals are you going to? Who is not doing this? Like, we're not holding up our end of the bargain. If we were just like maintaining civil ceremonies. I mean, there's plenty of guys with an online theology degree that you can, you know.
That's right.
If what you want some like, technicality of
Aaron
overseeing it.
Aaron had his eyes open yesterday, and now they're not. Thanks for coming.
We should create a handout for, like, being able to, if you don't want the gospel at your funeral, here's some phrases you can use. Blessed, happier, better place.
They look so good.
Yeah. Like,
no, they look dead.
Just, yeah. Like, you could do
they
it
look
as
so
a,
peaceful.
They always say they look so good.
Yeah, we could do it as a Mad Lib. My grandma looked terrible.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
After my grandma had a stroke, and like at her funeral, like she did not look good, and I don't know what kind of like fairy tale people are keeping up. Her soul is not in there. She is not looking great.
Yeah, no.
All right. Here's a question: would it be more appropriate to have the gospel at the funeral or at a wedding? Because those are usually the two events that a pastor gets called out for. Funeral or wedding?
Actually, I see that happen. Actually, I've seen quite a bit of commentary from pastors on that, and like most of them enjoy like would not enjoy, but like. They do funerals, and we're bowing out of weddings. They're just, like, not doing weddings because people are not wanting to hear that at a wedding.
It's interesting.
Yeah, people will tell me that, like, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Because when I read Jesus, and he's talking about how, you know, he comes to give us life and life more abundantly, he's talking about life. So a funeral would seem like an odd place to do that unless our theology is a little bit bent more around the, you know, Jesus offers fire insurance. And if that's the case, then it just sits a little bit differently. But if it's at a time where we're celebrating life, that seems like the time to really...
That's the vibe, yeah.
Yeah, bring out Jesus and say, hey, you want life? You want really abundant life?
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you about it.
Yeah. You know? But you should have stayed single, said Paul.
Well, yeah.
You're low rent.
Yeah.
I see you're burning with passion.
Yeah.
I guess that's why we're here today.
That's why we're here today. We are gathered here today because John is burning with passion.
Yeah. So we're going to keep this service going.
Wait, was that the funeral or was that the wedding?
That's rough. That's funny, though.
I got to say, you know, that's like a church joke that people who listen, they're like, what are they talking about? It's like,
I think it was one of Acuff's articles he put out where they were talking about the dudes doing Christian weddings. And, like, the preacher always makes some kind of sex joke, you know. And, like, he goes, enough with it, right? You think it's awkward enough that, like, let's say it is an actual Christian wedding. You got two virgins hanging up at the altar. You know what I'm saying? like, they're nervous anyway, and you're making a bunch of sex jokes up there, and they're like, I may have done that.
Back when I was irrelevant.
The girl's looking around like, you know, this is kind of embarrassing. I don't know really the whole story. And now you're telling everybody, everyone knows I'm going to have sex later, you know. Can we just stop talking about it, okay? Like, just be done.
You just ruined the mood.
Just be done with it. And then here's, you know, 40-year-old preacher man. Sex is a-coming. That's a good Christian sex, though, but still it's coming. It's like, that's it. Be done with it. Dude, just stop talking about it, okay?
It can be over.
I went to a couple of weddings where it was like that. He kept making like winks and stuff and like elbows.
That's just awkward.
Yeah, I was like, okay, dude, you know, seriously, there's adults in here. I think we get it, okay?
I may have referred like to the Song of Solomon before, but I don't like, you know, get out into like sex jokes.
Yeah,
but,
you need to cut that out, Dan.
I did a long time ago. It's probably about 10 years or so, and I thought, this is really kind of,
you know.
Are you turning red over there? I'm very sorry. But this is my night. I will be sharing laughter.
Right. Don't hire a pastor.
Who stands in the middle? Dan does. Dan stands in the middle. Now.
I come from the John Bova school of pastoring. We're like, it's about you, but really, it's about me. And somewhere it's about Jesus. Because it's about me. All right. Oh. What's happening? That's it? That's it, Dan?
That's it.
Everything? We've solved the world's problems. All right, Mike. What's going on with the Hubby Lubby?
Okay, I'm
going
to try to truncate this down because it's a big article here. So, it says, stop calling Hobby Lobby a Christian business. Mm-hmm. We're Christian, Hobby Lobby's president Steve Green proclaims, and we run our business on Christian principles. That is music to the ears of many conservative Christians who rallied around Hobby Lobby when the retail chain argued at the Supreme Court that Obamacare's contraception mandate unlawfully burdened their religious beliefs. But a closer look at Hobby Lobby's actual business practices reveals this claim to be as hollow as a flute. Turn over just about any trinket in Hobby Lobby's store, and you'll find a gold oval stamped with Made in China, a country that is one of the worst offenders of human dignity, unborn infant life, and economic justice anywhere in the world. Those shiny stickers littering every Hobby Lobby from sea to shining sea are more than a statement about a product's geographical origin. They're also a stinging indictment against the way the retailer has sought to label itself. Imagine for a moment a nation with nightmarish labor conditions, inadequate workplace regulation, and rampant child labor. Some provinces in China are raising their minimum wage standards, but don't rush to praise them. They're still only $293 a month. The Bible is replete with calls for economic justice. Can you call yourself a Christian business when you leverage your profits to support an economic system that blatantly perpetuates injustice? That's basically the gist of this article. Like, there's probably another 10 paragraphs here. But that's basically what they're saying is that Hobby Lobby, as a Christian business, and this question I'm asking is not so much a question of Hobby Lobby, but, like, they purport themselves to be a Christian business, yet their goods are sourced from, as the article would describe it, pretty much ill-gotten sinful means. We'll put it that way, sinful means. Are they, like, in the view of which we look at it, do we have a problem with them claiming to be a Christian business? Is this an issue at all?
Okay, first off, on planet Earth, manufacturing is done in China. If you want to be a relevant business, that's just the way you've got to go.
That's where it happens.
I mean, there's really no way around that one other than buy local. Is that the gist of it? Is that it's because it's made in China?
Well,
I think they're
basically upset because Hobby Lobby claims to be a Christian business, and they're fighting against, obviously, the Obamacare standards of where they have to supply contraceptives and birth control. And but on the same tilt that they're selling products that are being produced and obtained through non-biblical treatment of human life by a country. And probably the businesses that make them, let's be honest.
Okay, I guess second reality check would be the country with the largest population of Christians today is China. They're supporting businesses that employ Christians.
I mean, is the guy way off? I mean, what's the premise that he's upset about? He's upset that
it's a God and country argument.
Yeah, it's a guilt by association. It's to say. Yeah. You say that you hold the Christian principles. That's the leg you're standing on when it comes to the contraceptive mandate. However, you don't stand on Christian principles. You seem to be willing to be loose with them when it comes to buying cheap goods from China based upon their labor practices. That's the nature of his argument.
You're imperfect. Stop calling yourself Christian.
It's kind of a generalization, though. I mean, how do I know that if I buy, you know, a donkey little trinket at Hobby Lobby that was made in China at a place that has child labor? Does every one of them have it?
That is correct. Like, first of all, it's a very broad assumption.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, granted, their labor standards are looser than ours, legitimate.
Oh, yeah.
However, it doesn't necessarily mean that every trinket from Hobby Lobby is a sweatshop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we're being honest, I guess the thing that stood out to me is, like, I see what picture that he's trying to paint here, but, like, I don't know how you would expect anyone to do business, let alone live at all, based on the standard that you're proposing, right? Like, if I try to walk out of my house, I can't even look at my porch light because the guy that probably hung the transformer closest to my house providing electricity, he stole something back in fifth grade, and he doesn't even know Jesus, so then I can't use electricity. I can't drive car. I can't use gas because it's ill gotten from a country that we purposely terrorized through war. And then I can't drive on the public roads because it was funded through an asphalt company from the same oil that you're talking about. I can't buy food from McDonald's. I can't go to the grocery store. I can barely breathe the air. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is it that I could possibly do in life that is not somehow connected to a sinful behavior somewhere?
I think actually the person that wrote that would agree with your perspective, but then they would say, because it's not possible, stop branding yourself as a Christian company.
Yeah, I suppose you get in a little trouble trying to brand yourself as a Christian company. Yeah. It is a company. It's not a person. It's not a Christ follower. It is maybe there are Christ followers who are leading this company in the best way that they can to lead a business in a godly way, but it's not a Christian company.
Which I think that's something where we should have a problem with, right? Like, because I would agree with that. The company has no soul. And so, like, we should not be in the business of, like, promoting Christian companies.
That's just marketing.
Yeah, like, that's exactly. Who said that? The guys from Unseen Patrol were talking about
that's
it yesterday.
That, yeah.
Yeah, anything that, anything with the word Christian on it that isn't what? That isn't a person.
A noun.
That isn't a person is marketing.
Yep.
Yeah. If you're using Christian as an adjective, then you're using it wrong.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's that's the case with these companies. Like, we actually should have a problem with that, because we shouldn't accept being marketed to with a Jesus brand on it. However, like, it's much hypocritical on his part to first of all use loose associations to try to make what it is that they're fighting for in the Supreme Court irrelevant. Like, it's just a misdirection, and a bit of a red herring, but it's a way to kind of say, like, if you really believe what you say you believe, you should be fighting against China. Well, Christians do. Like, I mean, just because, like, one guy's not fighting every cause, that's like, it's like being upset for the guy that's say trying to help child welfare practices in China, but because he's not involved in the Nigerian sex trade, he's a hypocrite and a bastard. Like, it's an irrelevant and hypocritical standard to kind of place upon somebody. And kind of that's what he's – it's basically how you're claiming to be holier than thou, but they're not claiming to be holier than thou. Mm-hmm. They're trying their best as half fallible human beings to adhere to what God has asked them to do, and this is one of the things that is directly associated with them. Mm-hmm. And so – I mean, it's a bit petty. Mm-hmm. Just don't shop. I mean, whatever. You don't like the guy. You don't like them fighting the mandate. You want people to choose. Like, don't shop there.
You don't think he has any point at all? You know, like here's the deal. Like, if I was faced, we were faced with the choice that said, hey, you can open this store. There's good money to be made there. You can pay your employees well. You can operate at the way you treat your employees under Christian practices. All that. You can run it however you want. The product, on the other hand, it comes from a pretty questionable source that is not sourced out of Christ. Do you want to buy this business? Like, do you take any steps at all to say, you know what, I feel like the Lord, like God provides, and we'll get the product from somewhere that does it.
Definitely, the means matter. And like, as a if I'm having a one-on-one with a guy that runs a company who is doing anything that is not consistent with following Christ in their business, I would most certainly say, like, whatever it is that you find important in your business, it is not worth not doing the means the way God has called you to do the means. No, that's definitely true.
But like, from that same point of view and from the facts already heard, like, I mean, if manufacturing comes out of China, right, like, can a Christian sell TVs?
Sure, because not every TV manufactured in China is done by, like, a six-year-old. You know what I'm saying?
I bet a good portion of them are.
They've painted a very... what he's done is he's taken the worst thing and then painted someone with it.
Yeah.
He's dipped his brush in the nasty color and then like drew a painting of this guy with that brush. And whether it's true. Now, here's the deal. Like, if they're unscrupulous in their business practices and they're supporting sweatshops by buying knickknacks from it, then, yeah, that's a problem. But I mean, but like what he's done is he's not validated that. He didn't say, here's the ceramic donkey that's in aisle 7 at the local Hobby Lobby. It's made by, here's Pedro. Here's a picture of Pedro. He does these. He's probably, Pedro's probably not China.
He could be.
Could say Pedro San.
But Li Qing. All right. So in either case, he's making this donkey. He's 6 years old. Here's his mother. Here's her sad face. They ended up in these troubles, right? A legit journalist does that kind of thing and says, here's the two things together. He did not do that.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying it's true or not true. What I'm saying is like he didn't make any step to say this is actually happening. What he said is this does occur. They buy from China. And although they may not be happening between these two businesses, we should think poorly of them because of it. It's very lazy. It's a lazy deal. At least check it out. Validate it. And then whatever. I'm up in arms with you because the guy's not following the means.
Yeah. Okay.
But he didn't do that. He's lazy.
And so you're saying that it appears to be like a shot over 600 yards away saying, look. You know, they buy stuff from China. There's some businesses in China that are pretty unscrupulous. He's got to be hitting one of them. Boycott him.
Yeah, I mean, here's where he's right. I have the same problem. I have the same problem he has with people calling themselves a Christian company. I have it for a different reason. He's protecting hypocrisy. He wants to be able to point out that they shouldn't be able to fight for the mandate because they're not adhering to all Christian principles. Christian's not an adjective for your business, and so that's why I would protect it. But so, like, whatever, we're both offended. Call it a day. But his reasoning for being offended is significantly less grounded than mine. And he's not really taking much pain to actually validate what he says. He's just trying to ramp up people that would believe whatever he wrote as long as it was against something like Hobby Lobby fighting the mandate. And so, whatever, he might as well have just said it to himself and then cheered himself on and moved to something else.
You know, I'm great. Now that I think about it, I've said some clever stuff.
Article by Jay Buba.
I support this message.
How would you describe yourself if you're trying to run an organization, a business, or something like that, and you're trying to do this in a Christ-following way, not just for you personally, but you want your institution to follow Christ's principles? How would you describe that to the world? Or would you?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't lay it out as a... I wouldn't put it in my company mission statement or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I would just go about my business, and it should reflect Jesus.
But as a leader of an organization, how would you communicate that then to your employees?
I don't know that it has to... I think... I don't know. It should just reflect in the principles that we've otherwise laid out, right? Like I don't, yeah. Like I don't shake hands with someone, meet him for the first time, and then like say, "Here's how I live my life."
Okay.
But the following items, I don't know. I'm not on board with saying my example is the only thing I'm responsible for. Hopefully, they see Jesus in it. But yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't think I probably explicitly stay in any part of like my founding company because ultimately that actually has a little bit of a sniff of a Jesus branding where like I can be faithful in the means and I will try to put those out in the company. But like I will not otherwise try to. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that.
Okay.
I'm not sure on that, but I don't think I would. Yeah. We follow Jesus here. No, maybe you don't. That's probably the truth. It's like ultimately I'm dealing with a world that may or may not follow under that. And so like it may not mean – in fact, I changed my mind. I wouldn't do it because it's poor communication because it means something to me. It may not mean something to every employee that works for me because if they don't love Jesus, that standard is irrelevant to them. I've not communicated clearly with them if I do that. So yeah, my answer is probably no.
Okay.
Yeah. All right then. Have we solved that problem? Is that guy sufficiently taken care of?
Yeah, I don't think he's reasonable.
Probably
no reason with him.
There was a real cool. Well, what do we got time for here? Yeah, we got it.
You're done.
What? No. We got a couple minutes. We start a little bit late. So here, there was an article. It was called "I'm Southern Baptist, comma, and I love a man." But it's one of those zinger titles. So the gist of it was though is like how we have lost. I'll read a couple lines for it. It feels good to finally make it public. I love a man. I'm a Southern Baptist pastor, and it's true. Allow me to tell you about this relationship. He said, for all these things, he describes like all these interactions with this guy. He says, for all these things and for a future filled with more of this kind of love, joy, and Christian brotherhood, I must say, Lord, I thank you for this man that I love. He said, two groups tell us this kind of love is impossible. First, the world. If I were to tell nearly anyone on the street that I felt this way for a man, they'd insist I was experiencing homosexual attraction. This is a lie. Second, the church. Many of our churches would have us believe that brotherly love, the Bible encourages, must somehow develop over a bowl of buffalo wings while watching a UFC fight. This, too, is a lie. We as the church have conceded the kind of love I share with this brother of mine to the gay community. We are fearful of misinterpretation by our culture, fearful of vulnerability, fearful that maybe it's unbiblical. This is a lie from the Prince of Darkness. He wants brothers in Christ to feel uncomfortable with truly loving one another. He has perverted brotherly affection with homoeroticism and made it completely inaccessible to the believer. We as believers can no longer conceive of the kind of love Peter encourages, a sincere brotherly love, loving one another earnestly from a pure heart. Where is the love that is characterized by a humble mind and a tender heart? Brothers, if we display the love of Christ for one another, we may begin to establish credibility within the gay community. They don't believe we can love other men. Let's prove them wrong. Perhaps then, after seeing the true light of the gospel, love of Jesus, they will be drawn from the darkness where Satan holds them captive into the marvelous light of Christ's self-sacrificial love. So the interesting part of this for me was, are there elements of truth to that? Where like, we are fearful of being close and like loving brotherly love for another man because of how the culture might see that. Do you feel like there's some truth to that?
Dave Herc?
It almost sounds like a semantic argument over the L word. Essentially, he's saying you guys can, you know, he's making this division between love and attraction. And
yeah,
he's saying, I love this person. And I think that's valid to say. There's nothing wrong with that. So,
yeah.
But
do you think that impacts how close we are willing to get to other men from a Christian perspective because of a fear that may be interpreted as something else?
I think it just affects the vocabulary that we use. We're unlikely to say, "Hey, I love you," to another guy.
And yeah.
Just as a culture, we tend not to do that. But as far as acts of love and displays of it. Willing to sacrifice for each other. Yeah, absolutely. We're willing to do that. So it's just a vocabulary lesson, I think.
I don't see a problem here.
Me and Boomer discussed it. This is a non-issue.
This is a non-issue at all. It's just stupid. Like,
sometimes we all hold hands walking into church.
Are you kidding?
Sometimes I have to put my shirt on just to come on a show.
What?
I also don't think
that the gay community is going to say, oh, look, those guys tend to like each other. Let we're in, too.
Did you hear that man saying
they're not thinking about us.
I believe in God now. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
This stuff drives me nuts because you have to be truly non-genuine to have this be an issue. Like, if I love a dude, I say, I love that guy. If I don't love the man, I say, I'm either way about it.
I'm afraid to say I love a man because I don't want to be judged.
Yeah.
What?
I think that's an article by a guy who is irrelevant to the homosexual community. And trying to figure out how to reach them, like they're...
That's right.
They're like...
Yeah. He's the same guy...
Aliens. We don't know what to do with them.
That's right. He's the same guy writing cheesy youth group, you know, stuff that he's trying to sell to people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people, they see right through him.
No, right. Actually, if I were part of the gay community, I'd actually be fairly offended by his statement.
Exactly.
Right. Because it's ridiculous. I can be manipulated because of how you engage with other men. It's like, maybe I'm not attracted to other men, and I can just have good friends that are men, and I can love them.
Hey, mm-hmm. Look at me. I can say love to another man. Gay community, you should love me.
I get your people.
Yeah, exactly. I know where you're coming
from. That's pretty embarrassing.
That's ridiculous.
I know, yeah. That's diminishing the fact that you struggle with
something. I'm offended, and I'm not in any way gay.
Yeah, this guy's ridiculous.
Oh, boy.
This guy's ridiculous. Love your brothers in Christ. That's all you need to do. Stop being afraid of it.
You're listening to Life
actually,
of the
Actually, and hold on. I actually may have said something to Eric about this recently because he picked up a tray for me at the hospital and, like, took my tray for me. And I said, I don't know if that flies in this culture. I'm taking another man's tray to the garbage. I mean, there's a certain levels of protocol here.
True.
You don't stand next to a guy while he's in the urinal. You don't do you're not urinal buddies. And you don't, while he's sitting there, take his other tray and be like, I grabbed that for you, buddy. That's awesome. It's an awesome gesture. I mean, it does carry connotation.
Ben, I'm going to do that as many times as I can now.
Hey, and, urinal buddy.
The culture's wrong, but I'm just saying, that's how things work. This is Life from the Path. Hey, if you're on the podcast, we got to let you, wait, hang around if you're on the podcast. If you're on KTA, we got to let you go. Hey, big thanks to our sponsors, Bob Eisler from the Eisler team. Go to EislerTeam.com. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, Bob is the man that can help you with that. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital in Johnson, westfieldvethospital.com. You can set up an appointment online And they'll do the right thing for your pet's health and for your pocketbook. They're the way to go. And check them out, westfieldvethospital.com. We will be right back with you. Thank you for listening to Life from the Pad. There you go. We're back.
All right.
What do you need to know from last
What?
Time? What do you mean, what?
What are you talking about, man?
About what?
What cultural connotation is there for taking up a man's tray?
Hey, like other guy smiles at you, takes your tray, and walks away with it.
It feels weird.
It's weird.
It's not weird.
It's got...
You are ridiculous. I'm not
saying
it's weird.
I'm not saying it should be weird, but there's an element
You're
of...
the ones who just said it's weird.
I'm not... Yeah, I know.
Hey, did you
You said it's weird. I'm not saying it's weird.
I'm not saying it should be. I'm just saying that it is.
From what standpoint?
It just is.
Yeah.
We just don't do that.
Why?
You look another man in the eye and take his tray and put it away. I mean, there's an element of like,
where's the disconnect here?
Remember we
is
had
it looking in his eye or is it taking the tray?
No, we had the same conversation about you complimenting people about their commentary. We agreed that this shouldn't be weird, but it just is. It's just taking a weird effect.
If it shouldn't be, let's make it not weird and do it.
No, it's still weird.
Oh, my gosh. That is ridiculous. You know, I'm going to take you guys' trays and stare you right in the eye when I do it just so you feel weird, because that's ridiculous to feel weird for that. Why are you turning back on music, man? We're off the station break.
You're like the guy that wrote that article. Like, you're completely not – you refuse to validate how I'm feeling.
Did you read the article, Ben, that was on our that the Facebook group we're a part of that is secret and can't be named out loud? But about gay pride, the pain before the pride?
I didn't read it.
It is a good read. It is a guy who has struggled with homosexual tendencies and talks about pride and the issue of pride and the gay pride issue, and then him working through it and then actually coming to Christ at a later point. And I can't summarize it without reading it. It's been a few days, but...
Well, can we read it, or is it on your secret hoo-ha group?
Oh, it can be read. It's just...
It looks really long.
I think Ben should just do it. He's better at that stuff.
All right, I'll take a look at it, see what I can find out.
It was really well written. I was just...
What's the name?
Secret one.
Do they take people trays up?
No, not that group.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's have it.
Dear Life from the Path. I became a widower 2 years ago and only recently started dating. Although I am in my early 70s, I am in great physical shape and I have all my hair. Mm. I am also financially well off and I think I'm reasonably good looking. My concern is, how do I avoid becoming a trophy husband?
I didn't see that coming.
Here's a short answer.
That was the greatest question.
You're
I've
still
ever
alive.
Heard.
Every woman of that age will want you. It's impossible. Well, have you ever seen a guy at a nursing home? They're all crowned and walking down. There's Buddy. I mean, yeah.
If you guys can't tell, this is me.
He's a 70-year-old rich Adonis.
Wait, is that the end of the question?
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, he wants to not be a trophy husband.
You can't. It's going to happen.
Don't get married.
There's no stopping this thing.
Don't get married. There's no way you could be a trophy husband.
Oh, man.
Yeah, okay.
You don't tell anybody you have money, I guess.
No, here's the deal. Yeah, I think you will be the trophy husband. Just make sure it's for the right winner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all right to be an Adonis.
My wife married a trophy husband.
Yeah. Oh. Then how did she end up with you?
Kind of odd how that worked.
Okay, here's Secular's answer. She hit both the points. Secular says, that should be easy. Don't reveal your financial status, and don't propose to anybody. Done. Okay, yeah, she solved that one.
Oh, that's great.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I've been dating Hank for 5 years. He has always been a loner. He has never been married and has no kids. I don't think they're wrong with that. I don't think that's negative in his column. We lived together for 4 years, and our relationship is wonderful, other than his just being him, in quotes. He's kind of self-centered and not very communicative. Huh. Hank just learned that his mother is terminally ill. He came home from work, told me to pack and move out, gave me 5 minutes of his time, and then he left. I packed some clothes and I went. I'm not sure if I should stay away or try to get him to talk this through with me. This is tearing me apart. I know he loves me, but I'm afraid that with what's going on with his mom, he's shutting me out because he can't handle it. I'm the closest person to him, but he is pushing me away. Please give me some advice.
Okay, well, first off, it sounds like you're roommates and he just threw you out.
Yeah. Pretty matter-of-factly, too.
Yeah. You got 5 minutes.
My mom's dying. Get out. That's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, she wants advice. Should she talk this through with him?
No.
Yeah, she should.
You can give it a shot.
I mean, he's a loner. He probably likes to process alone, but he still shouldn't be alone right now.
That's asking an awful lot.
Maybe it's if you're really concerned about it, maybe it's not the time to bring up your relational status. Maybe it's just time to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's what she was asking. Should I talk? Did I talk it through with this with our relationship? Not should I talk to him about his mom?
No, I think she should just be there for him. From the standpoint of he's got a terminally ill mother, I think you guys are right when you say that it's not the right time to talk about relational. But that doesn't mean you just shut yourself out.
Mm-hmm. Well, she didn't shut herself out. She got thrown out of the house.
But she has the option to try and go back into the relationship, though. She has she's asking if she should, and that's what I'm saying. She should.
No, the answer is no. She should not. If you want to be there to comfort him,
right.
That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Yes.
I wouldn't bring up the fact that you date, have lived with him, nothing. Be like, I'm sorry about your mom. Anything I can do for you? That's it. Mm-hmm. Counter advice. Radio show moving on. No comment. Dan's texting somebody. No one's paying attention to the show.
One second.
All right. Dan doesn't give a crap. Here we go. Secular says. No, seriously, Dan. You don't have to answer.
Someone just asked me to marry them.
That's unfortunate.
That's big stuff.
Okay. Here we go. It says. Whether you should remain involved with Hank depends on how great your tolerance is for pain. He isn't shutting you out. He gave you one giant kick in the fanny. He also isn't kind of self-centered. He's very self-centered. If you're curious about his mom's health, call and ask from time to time, but do not expect to get back together anytime soon. To have ended the relationship with you the way he did was brutal.
Hey, man, Secular is on the nines today.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought she nailed that one. He is kind of a doofus. Mm-hmm. Granted, I mean,
I agree.
That's a pretty heavy time for a guy to not know how to handle something, but like taking it out on your lady. If that's the pattern of which your life is being set, he's a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: it isn't fair to paint his whole existence by his reaction to that. Like, it's obviously a rough spot in his life. It's not like his character is not indicted because he handled that situation poorly. Mm-hmm. However, to say that we've been together for 5 years, we've been living together for four, He's generally a great guy unless he's being who he is. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's a measure of not a man that you want to spend your time with. Like, when he's actually acting like himself, he's kind of a pain to deal with. Well, that's not marriage material. You're going to have to let him go. If you insist on being a friend or, like, that's a suffering, make sure your life is stable and that you can handle it. But from there on, I guess, like, yeah, you're going to have to give up on that relationship. You sounds like you probably should have a long time ago.
Yeah, this guy seems like a total parasite.
Total parasite.
Well, here's the deal, though. I don't think he is a parasite.
No.
I think he's actually the opposite.
Opposite, Buva.
Because he's not... I think he's just a using. He's a loner. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he's latched onto her and refuses to let go. That's a parasite. Mm-hmm. He's just using as long as you want, and then when it doesn't suit his needs,
what
he moves
on. What I'm talking
about
is like the last 5 years. Like, she's been with this guy for 5 years, been living with him for five years. It's just saying every time he's not himself, he's great. But I can't imagine that's very often. So I'm saying, like, the relationship they've had, I can't imagine that he's been really giving into the relationship. It sounds like she has been and he hasn't.
No, actually, I think she's the parasite. My guess is that she latched on to him.
Okay.
And she's fighting for a relationship that he doesn't really care that much about, but it's more convenient for him to stick around.
All right,
yeah.
Fair enough.
That's my guess with it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, you couldn't have been more wrong there.
Here we go. Thanks for bringing it around to me so I didn't have to. I appreciate that.
Woo. Here we go. Dear Life in the Path. For the last 10 years, my friends and I have gotten together on a fairly regular basis. We always bring potluck to share. While Marcia and I were assembling a meal, Cindy would contribute a bag of chips. We finally told her we thought the offerings were unequal, so she shaped up. We recently celebrated my birthday at my house, and Cindy surprised me with a beautiful blueberry crumble cake, which was her specialty. I was delighted and told her I had been craving that particular treat. As the afternoon wore on, I asked if we should bring out the dessert, but she said she wanted to wait a while. A half hour later, she announced she had to leave and wanted to take the cake with her.
Well, that's rough.
We often take leftovers home, but her dessert hadn't even made it to the table. When I said, but we'd have no other dessert, she said she had company coming and needed to take it with her.
Oh.
Then she put it in the container she had brought it in and left. Cindy is a close friend, and Marcia and I have put up with some of her quirks. But I'm thinking about confronting her about this latest gaffe because I'm afraid if I don't, my resentment will continue to build and our friendship will crumble. Am I being petty?
Well, here's the deal. Your description of this woman sounds like this shouldn't be such a surprise to you. I'm granting that it's outrageous. However, when you say we've got used to some of her quirks, this is not as outrageous to you as it is to me. I feel like you're kind of overselling it. So, yeah, I mean, if you continue to be friends with Cindy, I feel like you know how she acts. At some point, like, my wife stops acting surprised when she finds my socks on the floor next to the bed. That's where I put them. It should stop, but that's how it happens. And, like, the third time she goes, oh, I can't believe you leave your socks here. Like, that's just disingenuous. Yes, you can. I do it all the time. And so I think she fits into that category as, like, that's outrageous behavior, but I feel like you know that. And, yeah, there's no use confronting her with it. Just learn to deal with it.
I think it's pretty obvious that she has offended her friend. She brought the great dessert that she wanted, and then she left without serving it. So somewhere in that afternoon, the one who wrote the letter offended her friend and didn't even know it.
That is the weirdest lady behavior. I just don't understand women in general that would bring something and be like, I'm going to take it with me. I am more, and let's say I bring a 24-pack of soda over to somebody's house. I drink four of them. I am more apt to leave the 20 just so I don't have to load it back up in the car. And this woman has taken the time to bake a whole cake, bring it over, not give it to anybody, and haul it back into the car.
Yeah.
I'm blown away.
It's not just bring it back into the car. It's because she wants to serve it later for
there's actually other people coming over.
So it's saying that these other people are more important than you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a backhanded
That's some real weird behavior.
Yeah, it's like getting someone an empty box for Christmas. And you're like, well, I wanted to be represented under the tree.
I don't even know. I'm blown away. This word we could really use lady on the show. I have no idea what to say about something like this. If you guys did one of these things to me, I would ask you why you were being so foolish. And then I would ask you not to come to my house anymore. And then I'd make you sign a contract in blood.
Yeah, there I don't. I would let it go. It sounds like she's like that.
Here's what Secular says. Petty? I don't think so. What she did took the cake. And I'm not talking about pastry. I don't know what qualifies you, what qualities you look for in a close friend. But Cindy apparently appears to be unusually self-centered. What she said was not only rude, but showed a distinct lack of empathy for your feelings. By all means, clear the air, but don't count on Cindy to change. In fact, don't count on her for anything.
Ooh.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Boy, that's rough.
I don't know.
You're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us this week. If you have anything you'd want us to talk about or anything nasty you want to say about us, info@lifefromthepath.org is the place to go. And we'll leave you with that this week. Make sure you go to the website at livefromthepath.org. Check out previous clips. We'll get those clips from Unseen Patrol up. You can check those out and sign up for the podcast. Watch the videos. And hey, keep an eye out for events. We got a bunch of cool stuff coming up. In fact, we got a big concert at Zeke's on July 15th. We'll give you more about that next week. Thank you for listening to Life from the Path.